at that stage, it wasn't just gut. It was like, oh, this is going places. And at one stage, it was hard to not turn, you can never turn away business, but like the demand for Irish whiskey and demand for Irish spirits back then, like in the, you know, sort of early teens was incredible.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, we have the meeting of two great Garys, Gary McLaughlin, one of the founders of Glendalough Distillery, and well, me is the other one, if you hadn't guessed that. Gary is the marketing director and founder of Glendalough Distilleries. This is an incredible story, how four guys started with an idea, very little experience in the drinks business, and brought it to one of the world's biggest brands and leading to an eventual sale. Gary brings us along the whole journey. This is what I love about this podcast. We start with just how the guys got started over just a quick chat, a coffee, and then brought that idea right the whole way into a global brand, how they conquered America, the secret strategies they used. Gary gives us the whole nine yards on it. It's an incredible chat. Before we get into the chat with Gary, I want to say a quick thank you to my three partners for season seven. First off, we have Bay Street Innovation. Gareth and his team will help you with any sort of technical issue in terms of consulting, in terms of becoming your technical partner in the business. If you're a non-technical founder and you're looking for a solution, Gareth and his team are the first people you should talk to. Alternatively, if you have a business already built up, but it's filled with mundane, repetitive tasks, you think that could be automated, Gareth and his team might be able to build you a solution that will automate the vast majority of those. Talk to Gareth and his team. It's baystreet.io. Secondly, I want to thank chapter.ie. Deirdre and her team are 360 degree branding experts. They know exactly what they're doing when it comes to branding. If you have a brand and you're thinking, you know what, it's been a wild couple of years in the world, I could probably do with refreshing or moving in a new direction, Deirdre and her whole team have incredible experience in this area, and they'll be able to guide you through the whole process. Alternatively, if you've got a brand new concept and you have a little bit of budget to spend, they will bring it from concept to finished product and reality. Check out chapter.ie. And finally, Sean and the crew at findavenue.ie. I mentioned this a few pods ago. People thought it was a bit strange, but Christmas is actually not that far away. It's been a weird year, right? We can open, we can't open, we can open, we can't open. Christmas parties and Christmas venues are booking up. If you are a corporate event organizer and you're thinking we probably should do something, then get on to findavenue.ie. Get the jump on everybody else. Talk to Sean and the team. They will help you. It's still not too late. Get on to findavenue.ie and chat to Sean. Now, on with today's chat, Gary McLaughlin, the founder, one of the founders and marketing director of Glendalough Distillery. Gary, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Gary. Always good to meet another Gary.
I know. As I was doing the intro, Cindy, I feel like I'm speaking to myself in the third person, but we'll persevere. How are you?
I'm good. The sun is shining. And life is good.
I was complimenting on your lovely background there earlier before we started.
Oh, thanks very much. You have to put the best foot forward, you know. Do a lot of calls all around the world to various people, whether it's distributors or media or whatever. So I'm always selling. I'm always putting my best foot forward. So yeah, you have to try.
It looks good. I like it. I appreciate the effort. Gary, what's been happening with you?
Yeah, I suppose it's I'm now working with Mark Anthony Brands, who bought Glendalough Distillery back in 2019, and that was something that I set up with three friends originally back in 2011. So I am currently I'm marketing director for Glendalough and spreading the word, the Glendalough word, all around the world and enjoying every minute of it. So. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey, going from literally nothing to build the company to a place where somebody like Mark Anthony Brands wants to buy us. You know, they're the fastest growing drinks company in the world. And so really enjoying taking it now to the next level, which is which is very, very fulfilling, you know.
So, for my next
life
trick.
Is good. Life
I like,
is good.
I'll enjoy hearing that bit. Bring me back though, right? Another overnight success story, 2011 to 2019. Bring me back to 2011. How did this all start?
Yeah, and it's funny, some people could do say to me, geez, that happened very quickly. But it was sort of 10 hard years, 10 years of and very enjoyable slog all the same. So if we go back to 2011, mid-recession, a very good friend of mine who I had been in literally in play school with and all the way up through school, approached me with an idea. And at the time, I was MD of an agency in town, but my background's advertising. And I had worked on Jameson for 5 years in a previous life, as an account director, doing all their advertising, both in Ireland and also globally. And so when he approached me with an idea that was drinks related and whiskey related, I was all ears. And so Barry Galler, who's my friend I'm talking about, he was a drinks analyst in Davies, and he had written a paper, actually a white paper, on Irish whiskey's about to explode again. Like Jameson have obviously done an incredible job building up the category, but you know, there was good times coming, you know, from an Irish whiskey point of view. So he saw an opportunity, and himself and one of his colleagues in Davies, Brian Fagan, so really the two original founders, was there. They sort of came up with the idea. They approached myself back in 2011 saying, look, we have this idea. But you know, when it comes to brand, or when it comes to developing the brand or developing packaging and all that type of thing, not sure where to go. So you know, I suppose that's where the world I was living in at the time. And as I said, I just recently done 5 years working on the Jameson brand, so I knew the very first person I wanted to call, and that was the creative director who I worked with on the Jameson brand, and we worked together really well together, and he's a good mate of mine, so a guy called Kev Keenan. So basically, I remember the day well, back in January 2011, the four of us all met up at the bottom of Capel Street in Kevin's office, and trashed it out, and basically never looked back. We said, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to build a brand. We're going to build a very premium brand. And basically put our best foot forward. At the time, we were pretty much Ireland's first craft distillery, small distillery. So I'm probably jumping forward a little bit, but like if you go back to 2011, there weren't many distilleries in Ireland. There were the big boys. There was Irish Distillers. There was Bushmills. There was Cooley. But there weren't many others really at all. There's over nearly 40 now. So yeah, within 10 years, that's just, it has exploded. So Barry's white paper was right, by the way, that he wrote.
How did you know, though? How did you know that was right? Because like white papers come out every day, you know, predicting this, predicting that, predicting the other. Was it an inherent sense of what you'd seen in the market? Or how did you know that, yes, this is an idea I want to pursue?
I suppose when you work on something like Jameson, right, you are, and 5 years if you're working as the account director on the account, you're never going to know the brand as well as the brand owner, but you have to know about the category, you have to know about the competitors, and you get a real sense of the industry and the category, and you could feel, it was almost probably, you could feel the momentum of Irish whiskey. And I don't know, I suppose, you know, so it was 15 years in advertising, and one thing myself and Kev Keenan, I think two of us came out of advertising to do Glendalough, one thing I think we'd pride ourselves on is gut feel for sort of the zeitgeist, what's happening and what trends are coming down the road. And just because when you're in advertising, you work across so many different brands, you know, all different types of people, and you get to know people, you get to know trends and wants and desires and trends, right? You know, you really do. So I don't know, Gary, I think it was just, it wasn't one specific thing. I went, yes, that's because, or that's why this is going to work. We just, you know, I suppose we were all the sort of mid-30s, all sort of ambitious, definitely the four of us. sort of like, okay, all the good jobs, decent jobs, but was this it? Was this our lives? You know, did we want to do more? Yes, we did want to do more. We wanted to put you know, we wanted to make our own mark on you know, in business, in the world, whatever. So sorry, that's not really going back to answering your question, but I suppose, yeah, it was just an understanding of the category.
A gut feeling and inherent knowledge. The knowledge just builds and builds. You can't specify why. You can't point to the line in the paper and go, oh, look, that's the stat. It's a gut feeling. And you see that with a lot of entrepreneurs. They're going around for a couple of years, maybe in a startup working on something. It's not working. But suddenly, there it is. That's the tweak. It sounds like that happened for yourselves. Talk to me about something you just said, though. Four good jobs. That's great, but it's also scary.
It is. And some of my more conservative friends have literally looked at me, especially when I took the jump. It's like, what are you doing? Like, seriously. I had twins on the way when I did it, right? So twins coming, mortgage, all the rest, you know, recently married. And it was like, are you crazy? But do you know what? I never felt that fear. Okay, there's a bit of intrepidation, but, and also, sorry, foot was on both boats for 4 years. So weekends, nights for 4 years.
Interesting.
Straddling both.
Okay, so 2011, 2015, like, right, you managed to balance both.
Yeah, with difficulty. Hmm. And during that time, was involved in another startup in the advertising side of things. Again, if you go back to that 2011, like, it was serious recession, and people and agencies were being letting go left, right, and center. But there was an opportunity within, and again, go back 10 years. Data. Sorry, no, I'm jumping all over the place a little bit here, but data and creativity. Right. So I'd worked in a creative agencies all my life, but I'd also worked in very sort of a direct response, data driven digital agencies too. So I started a creative data agency as well during that time. So I had a lot going on, because look, bills had to be paid, and Glenlock wasn't going to be paying our bills for some time. So one by one, we left our sort of full time roles. I think I was second of the four to leave. Barry, who was my good mate, he left first. So 4 or 5 years of straddling both boats, and then I was like, right, look, you literally, you know, you're going to kill yourself. So, you know, choose. And I suppose I chose the one which I had equity in, and I knew had promise. I just, at that stage, it wasn't just gut. It was like, oh, this is going places. Mm. Like, literally myself and Barry. So Barry took sort of production and finance side of things, and I was sales and marketing side of things. And at one stage, it was hard to, you know, it was nearly like, you know, you can never turn away business, but like the demand for Irish whiskey and demand for Irish spirits back then, like in the, you know, sort of early teens, was incredible, you know? So we expanded actually quite quickly. Again, I would see that off the back of the success of the likes of Jameson and Bushmills and Tullamore Dew and all that around the world. But people were then going, okay, trading up and looking for more. What are alternatives to the big boys? You know, a bit like beer and craft beer and how that went, you know, and people getting a sort of more discerning taste and that type of thing.
How did you straddle both jobs, though? Because that's something that's kind of not really talked about. There's a big myth in entrepreneurship. Oh, burn the boats. Oh, go all in. You can't build a business unless you're working at it 120 hours a week. How did you straddle both? What was your management style for that? As in, how did you manage the hours? And any tips or tricks for people who might be considering? Because a lot of people message me after pods and go, oh, I listened to so-and-so and I was so inspired, but I have a full-time job. Mm. So how did you do it? Mm. Break it down for me.
With difficulty, Gary, and I won't say, you know, if I'm ever asked tips and tricks or how do you do it and all the rest, look, it's a cliche, but geez, it's hard work. You know, it's long hours. It was 10, 11 hours in the agency a day, and then definitely a couple more at night on the business on Glenlock every weekend. So it was tough going. I know if people say, you know, 120%, that's what you need to give. Of course, if you can give that, if you can afford to give that, if you're backed or whatever, if you have the money, of course, that's what you do. You know, I would love to have been able to do that back then, but you couldn't. The four of us had young families and mortgages, so we just had to have two jobs going. So it was needs must, and I suppose if you have the focus and the drive, and if everybody's pointed in the right direction. And sorry, just there was four of us. So suppose if you collect those four, let's say I could give 2 hours a day or whatever it was, and everybody could give 2 hours a day. There's a day's work that you were giving.
That's a good tip.
So actually, suppose our formula was sort of, okay, I'm the marketing strategy, that side of the things. With Kev, who's creative strategy, marketing strategy. Then we have Barry, who's finance and became extremely good at production. And then Brian, who's sort of more accountancy and finance. So our four skill sets together, part-time, was enough to do it. Was it ideal? No. Were there fights? You know, oh, you're not doing enough, or, you know, why can't you do more, or whatever? Oh, yes, there were.
Predicting my next question, Gary. How did you manage that, though? How did you manage the four of you being a little bit in, a little bit out? Because that seems to be a road a lot of entrepreneurs fall down on.
Yeah, and I suppose looking back on it, it would be, look, hindsight's a great thing, isn't it? It wasn't easy, but in saying that, when you respect the people that you're doing business with and can talk very openly with them, it's a lot easier. Not easy, but it's easier. And I suppose the acknowledgement, especially when you're developing a brand and developing a business, there's going to be times within that development, within the life cycle, where certain people are needed a lot more than others. You know, for example, at the very start, of course, we needed a really good marketing strategy, but we needed a brand, we needed an icon, we needed a bottle with a label and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that's sort of where we started. Having amazing liquid was sort of like a hygiene factor. So like Kev, for example, the creative director, spent so much time at the start, and I can remember him going, "Geez, like literally not enough hours in the day and all the rest." And he was straddling two jobs because he was creative director in an agency. So I remember him being like really at the start, ridiculously busy, where I you know, at the very start I probably did a chunk, and then it got to a stage then when, okay, we need a sales and marketing guy to manage all these markets and develop the business, and then that was my time to put my bulk of the work in, you know. So yeah, it's communication, it's respecting each other, it's trying to have that foresight. It's hard sometimes that, look, there will be, you know, there will be times when people are going to have to put more in than others. But collectively, if you look back over the 10 years, you know, we've all killed ourselves to get to where we are. It wasn't easy, you know, and people do say it's overnight. Isn't it? Yeah, okay, 10 years sounds like, what's a little less than 10 years, but 10 years into it now. But
it's dog years when it's a business, though. It's definitely dog years.
Yeah, I didn't have a gray beard back then. But look, it's hugely fulfilling as well, and I would do it again in a heartbeat, as in, you know, never regret leaving the job and doing this full time and that, you know, that's been.
How did you know it was time to jump? How did you know it was time to go all in?
Glendalough was literally Barry went first, as in jumped from Davies first, and he was at the time drowning. He was like, lads, I need help. and I had a real appetite to get in as soon as I could, because I could feel that sort of gut, you know, thing we were talking about. I knew this was going places. So yeah, like, so that's that. It was yeah, I can even remember the moment when it was just like, yeah, this is the right thing to do.
When was the moment? Was only a year. Tell me about it.
it was in a boardroom, and you know, Barry basically explained where he was at and the demands that was coming in for the products, and, you know, production and labels and bottles and casks, and, you know, and he was like, lads, I can't. And I was like, okay, well, I know what's on my plate, and I know what I prefer to do. You know, is it manage these multiple clients and answer to you know, a CEO of a business, or manage my own, you know, paddle my own canoe with Barry and help out my best mate and do something I really, really want to do desperately badly, you know, really badly. So it was, to me, it was an easy decision.
How did you feel? How did you feel when you met it?
I felt great. I didn't enjoy giving my notice into the you know, CEO who I was leaving. He got a, he'll laugh at this if he's, well, I hope he will, if he's listening. But I remember feeling so bad that, feeling guilty about the whole thing that I, see them behind me there, those two big bottles there, left and right. So Brian O'Driscoll invested in us. And that was mad, right? That was a mad, mad, mad time. Again, I remember exactly where I was when I got that news. It's like when you remember where you were when, like, Princess Diana died or whatever. I'm a big rugby man. I played a lot of rugby and captained lots of good teams and all the rest. So yeah, I'm a mad rugby fan. And he was a couple of years behind me in school, as in I'm older than him, as you might imagine. Yeah, he'd seen our putchim. Our putchim was the first thing we made. Sorry, I am jumping around here a bit. Is that cool?
That's fine. I'm enjoying the journey. I'm enjoying the story. I want to ask you what you gave to the guy in the boardroom first, because I need to know. Everyone's wondering, what did you give him?
It's coming. Sorry, I know, a bit long-winded. But O'Driscoll saw our putchim on the back bar of the Brass Monkey, and Brass Monkey had invested in us, the owner of Brass Monkey in New York. And he said, "What's that? That's cool. I like that." What's, yeah, so basically, he showed them the logo and the brand and all that.
He saw it in New York?
He saw it in New York. So he's literally sitting in the back bar, having a beer, whatever, and he saw in the back bar, "Oh, what's this? St. Kevin, that looks a bit Irish. Right? Give us a look." So Sean and the Brass Monkey was like, "Yeah, here." Gave him the spiel, gave him the story, and yeah, I'll put a few quid in, whatever. And Brian's like, "Wow, I'm about to retire." This was 6 months before he retired, and he was about to retire. And I wonder, you know, that sounds like a, you know, I suppose... But he liked the sound of it, like four lads sort of following their passion, leaving what they're doing to go and follow, you know, to do their thing. Mm. And he was like, tracking they'd want some investments, you know. So it was amazing when we got that call. It was like, wow,
that's cool. What happened next, though? What did he do? Did he send an email? Did he get a call? What did he do?
I think Sean put him in touch with Barry, who he knows, and yeah, sort of never look back.
That's one of those surreal calls. You think your mates are pranking you.
It's mental. I'm very tall. So I remember where I was, and he told me, and then she's sitting down, and I was like, "What are you talking about? No, you're mad. No, seriously." So yeah, a lot of people thought, like, "Oh yeah, he was a brand ambassador for us." He wasn't. He was an investor, and he was very clear about that. "No, I'm investing in a company that I think is going to do well."
Very good.
Which was great. And getting that, you know, I suppose really does lend a lot of credibility to the company as well. And, you know, because I think he's a very astute guy, he's a respected guy, and all that. So when O'Driscoll came in, we did a special batch of 13-year-old whiskey just for him. And fortuitous, I was 13 years old, because he's wearing number 13. So I don't know if you can see it on there, but his signature's on that box. So I gave the CEO a bottle of this. We all got six bottles ourselves.
Okay.
I gave one to my dad, one to my brother, one to an uncle. I've kept two for my twin boys whenever they're 18. They better not drink it when they're 18.
No, maybe put that in a glass case to indicate.
Yeah. But I gave one to the CEO to say, "Look, no hard feelings." So I hope he still has it, or he's drunk it and he's enjoyed it. So sorry, love, very, very, very long-winded story.
No, it's a good story. That's what we're all about. That's why these are long-form interviews. Yeah. It's stories like that about the little Brian O'Driscoll anecdote that make stories worthwhile. Stories what captivate people. That's a cracking story. I like that. Well, at what point did he come on board?
2014.
Okay. So yeah. Relatively early on in the journey. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And super shareholder. Great shareholder and very supportive. So yeah, no, it was good. And yeah, it just, again, that's momentum. You know when you feel these sort of things, okay, geez, that's serious momentum when somebody like that places their trust and their hard earned money into your business. I think that's a real validation, you know.
So when you started, how do four lads who have some experience in the drinks trade, but not direct experience. Mm. How do you start a distillery? Where do you even begin?
Yeah, you get good at filling out applications for grants. Because look, we decent enough jobs, but none of us were like in any way, you know, independently wealthy or anything like that. You know, we didn't have big funds to put into it. Our still in Wicklow was half what was paid for by Wicklow Enterprise Board.
Okay.
We got marketing grants from Bord Bia. I cannot say enough about Bord Bia and how supportive they've been over the years. Hugely supportive. So we raised quite a good bit of money that way, you know, and that's, you know, you have to do it. As an entrepreneur, you have to do it. You get good at filling in these forms. But like, again, you know, if you're authentic and if you have a good idea and if it actually has promise, you'll get the reward. You'll get those grants. And then on top of that, then we did two rounds of funding. You know, of funding, and people investing in us. And basically took a big step. We leased a property down in Wicklow. We got Barry traveled over to what do you call it, the Black Forest in Germany to get our still. We visited a couple of distilleries that we had a lot of time for, you know, Sipsmith. I don't know if you've seen Sipsmith gin, they're recently bought as well, but they had a gourd, they're making brilliant gin, beautiful gin. And we knew they'd crack in the distillery, same as Monkey 47 is the distillery, or still as well. So we got one of those stills, it's 100 grand.
Wow.
It arrived over on a flatbed truck. And I'm not messing. I'm no word of a lie. It was like an IKEA project. So it was.
Oh no!
It was like, you know, there would be like one on the end of that, and then one on the end of that. So okay, so screw that into that. Okay, cool. Right, where's two? The four of us put the steel together.
No way.
So a creative director, a marketing guy, you know, two finance guys. We built our steel. And
wow, I assume for 100k it came with an engineer who did all the heavy lifting. That's crazy.
Mental. And then when we actually turned it on, steam started coming out of the wrong places. It was crazy. But look, eventually we had to get the engineer over to make sure it all worked, but we put that together. But and we painted the place. You know, there's a big St. Kevin logo in the back wall. You know, I was up top of the ladder with Kev, making sure it was straight. Like we literally did everything from start to finish. You know, you talk about chief bottle washers. Oh, yes, I washed bottles. I filled bottles. I put labels on bottles, as we all did. So it was literally baby steps. Get advice, talk to the right people. Get production advice. Barry and Brian are good, really good contacts because they worked in the beverage analyst. They were beverage analysts within Davies, so they're very good contacts within the drinks industry in Ireland. And you know, the industry in Ireland are really good at sharing knowledge. It's funny, right? So I've seen it from both sides at the coalface sales and marketing. It's quite you know, cut and thrust and you know, you're fighting for that shelf space, but actually in the background, the production side of things, it's a real harmony. It's real, like Irish Distillers, for example, could not do enough for you because they want the industry, they want the whiskey and the spirits industry to be at a real super premium level and a really, really high end level, because it's, you know, if people start messing around and doing things, cutting corners, it's no good for the industry, you know? So people were really, really good to us in terms of what to do and who to do it. And we had consultant distillers work with us and train our distiller up and all that. So it was literally baby steps. Hadn't done it before, but we learned how. We made lots of mistakes. I know it's again cliched, but move fast and break things. Yeah, we did. and if we're doing it again the next year or a couple of years time, you know what not to do, you know. And I know that's cliched. I know it is, but it's very true.
It is the truth, because if you sat around waiting for the perfect time or the perfect method, or you couldn't, especially when you're trying to get that first bottle. How long did it take between the idea and to rolling that first bottle off?
Never forget the four of us all jumping in a Golf, two-door Golf, driving down to bottling line, and we'd all put a few grand in to literally just like a couple of grand in to make it happen. So that was about, I think it was 14 months after we met in Capel Street that we had a bottle.
Oh, wow. That's fast. 15. That's very fast.
Mm-hmm. And was it 14 months? Maybe it was a year and a half. I can't remember the exact date. It wasn't winter, it was summertime. So yeah, I think it was a year and a half afterwards. But then it was like, okay, great, you've got a bottle. And that was it. Look, our strategy was like, we have to get, first of all, we need a brand. We need a nice bottle. As I said, liquids, hygiene factor has to be amazing liquid. You know, we're a premium brand. And then we have a bottle. So what do we do with it? You know, so Barry, who I've talked about a few times now, his first cousin was selling Irish whiskey for another distillery over in America, and incredible salesperson, incredible. We got him on board, and he's, you know, big whiskey advocate, big Irish spirits advocate, young guy. So we were in mid-30s, he was mid-20s. But incredible energy and drive and passion. And so he came back over from the States, and we said, all right, how are we going to launch this and how are we going to do it? So like I remember Barry tells the story really well. He went in with a bottle of Putchin to the Celtic Whiskey Store, who are an incredible, brilliant, amazing liquor store. I keep calling them liquor stores, they deal with the States so much, but independent off license there in town. And Ali was like, just Putchin, you know, like there's been a few dodgy Putchins and, you know, not sure, but look, I'll buy a case off you, you know? And I think Barry was on to his dad straight away. Okay, dad, look, tomorrow or whatever, we go in and buy.
Yeah.
Go in and buy a bottle or two of that Putchin.
Why, that bottle over there looks beautiful. I'll take three.
Yeah. Ooh, what a great brand. And So anyway, Barry likes to remind Ali about that. It'll never work, you know?
So that was your first product was Putchin. And why was that? Because it was easy to make, or is easier to get to market, or what was it?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. So yeah, these whiskey basically has to be laid down for 3 years in a day before you can call it a whiskey. Well, let's say lay down, basically you make it, you distill it, you put it into a barrel, and you have to wait for 3 years until it's Irish whiskey. With Putchin, you don't age it, so you basically can make it and you could bottle it there that day, and it's unaged. So it's a lot easier to make, a lot quicker to make. But there's also a brand reason too. So I haven't talked to you at all about this guy on our bottle, St. Kevin. So so St. Kevin was it was son of royalty, right? So back in the 6th century, just past Tala, that's where he grew up, and his dad was the king of Leinster back in the day, right? Kevin didn't want to be a king, he didn't want to be the whole royalty thing, so he was mad into his sort of, you know, outdoors and animals and very spiritual, very learned man. So he said, right, not doing this. So he took over he went over the Wicklow Hills, the mountains, until he found his amazing, beautiful valley, which is Glenbloc, where he called it his home. Because he was such a learned man and people started listening to him, people came out from Dublin to listen to him and to hear what he had to say. And that developed what is now the monastery in Glenbloc. And it became from one man literally living on his own, 2,000 people actually worked the land and lived there, and it became a place of pilgrimage. And so anyway, look, all great story and all, what's that to do with whiskey? In the 6th century, Irish monks were the very first people to ever distill alcohol. They were the first, the sort of ground zero of alcohol. So in monasteries like Glenloch, that's where it all started. So we were like, oh, this is good. This is all coming together. And also every single one of us, the four of us, that's where we were brought as kids for walks. Mm. That's where we bring family when they're old. Yeah. It's such an amazing, stunning place. So if you mix all that sort of together, and then we really got into, myself and Kev, from an advertising branding sort of point, we really got into the whole backstory of St. Kevin, and there were some amazing stories and legends and fables and all the rest. But one of them was, you know, as more and more people came to Glenloch, he used to go up to the upper lake in Glenloch, and that's where he'd stand and pray. So hands up to the air, knees in, you know, up to his knees in water, as you do. He stood there praying one day, and a bird, blackbird, came and landed in his hand. and laid three eggs, as they do, you know, mistook them for a tree. And so he was like, okay, this is a test of my resolve. Yeah, I'm being tested here, so I'm going to wait till those eggs hatch. So 13 days and 13 nights later, eggs hatch and they fledge, and we were just like, okay, it's a story, it's a fable. Every saint sort of has one, but this guy, amazing. You know, this guy does things the hard way. And at the time, we actually couldn't probably articulate. We didn't articulate it, but after a couple of years, we came with two words to sort of symbolize not just that, but our philosophy and how we do stuff. And it's stand apart. So we have it on every bottle. So stand apart. Sort of do stuff. If you do stuff the hard way and you go about it and really, really put the effort in, things tend to turn out a lot better.
So we
stick them on our bottle to remind us of.
Yeah.
We stick them on our bottle to remind us of just go for it, you know, and everything we do from a Glendalough point of view, like our gin, we forage for the ingredients that go into our gin, and that's what gives it its USP. It's, you know, that's what makes it stand apart. That's what gives it, you know, its specialness. So we have a full-time forager who's out literally today, would be picking botanicals, picking elderflower at the moment.
That's incredible. Full-time forager going around getting the ingredients all around Ireland.
You should interview her, I tell you, Geraldine Kavanagh. She's her own business as well, Wicklow Wild Foods. But that's her day job, is all around Wicklow. So it's a taste of Wicklow. So it's from Wicklow.
That's amazing.
So yeah, botanicals from all year round. So our gin takes a year to make. So it's basically botanicals from all four seasons go in to make our gin.
Wow.
So that's what I mean by doing things the hard way. Our that 13-year-old here, we're bringing out a 7-year-old pretty soon. That's aged in Mizunara oak. So oak from Japan, Hokkaido in Japan. So we go like all the way to Japan to find just the rarest, most special oak that just flavored. So yeah, just the whole stand apart and ethos that we sort of have. It's a filter that no matter whether we're hiring somebody, designing a t-shirt or a label or whatever it is, doesn't stand apart. Is it worthy? So that's St. Kevin and Glendalough. Again, I've gone down a rabbit hole, but
I was going to ask you because it's I've seen it. You see it in bars, you see it in shops, and it just does catch the eye. It's not your standard kind of drinks label. It's not the usual coloring. It's very, very different.
And there's method behind that madness though as well, because I was 15 years in advertising. Kev Keenan was 20, 18, 19, 20 years in it. So we'd worked on all sorts of brands and challenger brands a lot. We gravitated, what's the model says about this? We gravitated towards drinks brands, but challenger brands as well. That's what we sort of get a real kick out of. And we just know, like, if you have very little money, you have to make it jump off the shelf. You know? So actually the cruciform, is something that the human eye can't but look at, you know. It's literally drawn to it. So there's actually a bit of method behind our madness as well, you know. So
that's good advice for any kind of startup though who are struggling to, you know, get their thing out there. It's like, absolutely, it has to have a story, has to grab people. I think people get caught up in the love of the idea as opposed to the love of why someone else will love the idea. I think it's good to keep that at the front of your mind. So
and
what was your
engaging too?
Yes.
Well, it depends where we are.
I think it has to be these days. Sales are mainly done through your eyes, through what you see on social, through what you see, you know, in front of you, and whatever it is, ads or billboards or even just on the shelf. What was your go to market strategy then? As in, you developed a great brand, great product. Mm-hmm. How are you going to sell that?
So the guy I told you about who came back from America, Donald O'Gallagher, he was our sales guy, and we made a decision early on, right? There are going to be more distilleries coming quite quickly. We need to go global. Not forget about Ireland, of course not. It's our home market. But so launch here, but very quickly go to Boston. We went to Boston and Washington DC. We just felt Boston was probably the place where, okay, there's Irish there, excuse me, a lot of Irish there, but probably you know, a place of least resistance, put it that way. So Donald went over, based himself in Boston, and I can't say any more than just shoe leather, tenacity, drive, coupled with what I would say, and again, it sounds like I'm blowing my own trumpet here, but myself and Kev Keenan having worked on Jameson, having worked with Paddy Power and PlayStation and all sorts of big global brands, we knew what the best brands were doing. We designed and developed toolkits and strategy for basically making what we had work as hard as we possibly could. Mm-hmm. So that's one person, pretty much. Now, it became two quite quickly. We hired.
Were you selling to bars, to big retail stores? Where were you selling?
So we would pick an area. People who are listening to this probably have heard of Lighthouse Strategies before, but like, we pick an area in Boston where our target market, where they'd hang out. Okay, so
Lighthouse Strategies.
Lighthouse strategy. So there's your lighthouse, and your lighthouse is turned on, right? So when your lighthouse is on, you can't put a bit like St. Kevin on the label, but you can't put notice. The light is flicking around. You see every time, go for a walk down Dunleary Pier and look out, and you see, oh, geez, there's the lighthouse. So that's what we mean. What do I mean by that? Is, so you pick an area, and then you pick, okay, what can we afford to do? We've X thousand. And that's probably a small, 2,000, whatever it was small, right? What are we going to do? Okay, let's pick those three pubs and those four or five off licenses around those pubs and just invest in them. So just go hell for leather, investing in those bars, over servicing them, very much becoming the barman's friend, the liquor manager, the off license owner's friend, the people that work there, giving them, swag. So look, here's one of our company I'm working for, White Claw. Giving them cool stuff, immersing them in our brand, doing pop-up nights, so where we have cocktails and all the rest, where our brand ambassador will be there, Don will be there, giving them the spiel, talking to them all about it. And basically the idea is, if they're beacons for your brand in that cool area where your target audience are hanging out, well, then it's going to wear off on the other bar. It's going to influence the other bars, because those people are going to go to another bar and go, do you have Glenlock? McLaughlin's bar over there has Glenlock. So, and then bartenders move, off-license people move, and they're like, oh, no, it's a cool brand. Did you not meet Donald? Oh, look, they go out foraging. So it's basically, you're influencing the key people in those key areas, and that just spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads. And that's how we built our brand in America, and prove that, look, we can do this in Boston. And if we can do this in Boston, Mr. Distributor in Florida, we can do it in Florida too. And here's our playbook. This is what we're going to do for your brand. And it's not just shoe leather. It's not just one person. It's also then really good social media assets that, plant a pin. There you go. So it's a McLaughlin's bar in Boston. Okay, we're going to target people with a 5-kilometer radius of that. People who like craft beer, whiskey, gin, into these bands, whatever it is, those type of our target market, and make sure that they see this. Small, smart spending but really focused and it worked. It's a really good, it's a hard working strategy, but it's worked, and it's worked for us multiple times now in many markets within the States, but many states within the States. We replicated that in other markets as well. So we replicated that in Canada and in Ireland, in Germany, France, and Italy, and Australia, New Zealand, some Asian markets. Now, you can't do everything, right? So again, that's another real learning. We went quite big quite quickly in terms of, as I was saying, we were literally getting phone calls about, oh, we want an Irish whiskey. So we quite quickly were global. Like, we're in 40, over 40 markets now, but like, we were in over 30 quite quickly. Within two years, we're in about 30 markets. And look, it wasn't easy. I'm making it sound like people were ringing us and it was easy to sell. It wasn't. I spent hours and days on planes and sleeping and not very nice hotels, and I remember actually going to a place in the drinks business where you pick up business, and where all the distributors from all over the world come to is Provine. So it's in Dusseldorf, and you find a probe and the Mesa there. So the Mesa is like the hall. There's like, it's about the size of, I'm not messing, about 16 of EVA stadiums big.
Wow.
And each of EVA stadiums is roofed over it. Each has a, so there's maybe two France, there's France, there's the EVA stadium one and two, and that's all French wine. And there's Italy. And it's humongous. I'm going to get this wrong, but 30, 40,000 sort of type of people are at these for a couple of days. But there's a small enough spirit section, and Bordbia really promote and help Irish brands get in there and sort of assert themselves and show off their wares. But for the first couple of years, we just didn't have the money to do it because it's still expensive. So like for 2 years, I flew over on a red eye. I based myself in a coffee shop right beside the Irish Spirits area, and I just made so many phone calls and emails and all the rest that I met 10, 12 people each day and got business out of it. So those two trips, probably we signed up, I don't know, maybe 8-10 markets that we're still in now, you know. So yeah, like you just have to think differently, and you just have to cut your cloth, you know. If you have the passion and drive and ambition, you find out ways of making it happen, you know. But you are up against the big boys, and you're up against the big competitors who have tons of money to spend on things like this and activate these conferences and exhibitions where we just have to think a bit smarter about it. You know?
I love that though, Gary. There's two strategies there that any startup listening can use, because people think, oh, I don't have the money to go global. Oh, I don't have the resources. Often, you guys broke America literally one street and one bar at a time. And that seems so small, I'll never get the impact, but small increments over time compounds. That's an incredible story. That's brilliant. And thank you so much for sharing that.
Not at all, but you can go with your case study of that Cambridge in Massachusetts, which is a small area in Boston. But you can go, look, this is what we did in Cambridge. You know, we can do this in the whole state of Chicago or Illinois, you know, or whatever. And that's what we did. And again, I'll give you one more quickly, like another big, it's Germany as well, but BCB, Bar Covenant Berlin, is a place where all the on-trade gravitate toward, well, pre-COVID, gravitate towards in Berlin. It's a brilliant 3 days. Again, really expensive to activate. You'd spend tens, hundreds of thousands, some brands would spend on it. We said, right, it's hectic, it's mental. All our distributors are going to be there to make sure that we keep in with our distributors and to develop and nurture the relationships. Okay, we could spend 20 grand on the stand and probably get a couple of seconds talking to them because it's really noisy. But you know what we could do? I was just thinking differently. We got a suite in a hotel right beside it. So a fancy enough suite. We slept there. Myself and Barry slept in the suite overnight, which was nice place to sleep. But we met them. We just set up an area where we were launching our new bottles, and they came and they just took a load off and met us, had a coffee, had a drink, and every single one of them were like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. I wish everybody did this. Because so again, it's just thinking a little bit differently and going, okay, I want to do this. How am I going to get there? I can't afford it, but there's always ways.
And conferences are boring and horrible. You're just trolling around, going around. You're trying to get them to your stand. Yeah. They're trying to like, oh, I have a meeting in 5 minutes. That's a great idea. Just, you're there, but you're there in a different form, and you're there in a way that captures people's imaginations and attention. So bring me up to speed.
Yeah.
You've had a wild couple of years. How did the sales process come about? How did you end up selling?
So the two guys who were in Davies had a really good, as I said, a good relationship with people in the drinks industry within Ireland. And one of those was an incredible businessman called Davin Nugent, who's worked for a few big global brands, and the guys were pretty tight with him. And Davin had done extremely well with Copperberg, and had a new role as CEO of Mark Anthony Brands International. And pretty much just when I say a startup, it was Davin and one other person beside Wardgosh Theatre, there where their office was. And so, look, the guys were good friends, and they kept in touch. And Davin saw what we were doing, and he'd set up this Mark Anthony Brands International. So Mark Anthony is a Canadian company run by a man called Anthony Von Mandel, who's hugely successful in both the wine trade, but also the RTD, ready-to-drink trade. So I don't know if you've seen White Claw.
I bought a multi-pack of it last night in Tesco.
Good man. Good man.
The marketing is working.
Good. I'd like to hear it. So, Anthony, incredible man, real visionary, and had it was Davin's remit to grow the business internationally. So they were based in Canada. They have an office in Chicago as well, from an American point of view. They wanted a European office and somewhere to grow their brands. It's a real Irish success story. So while Davin was starting that up, we were really motoring with Glendalough, and he asked would we be interested to have a coffee, and we did. And anyway, what came of that was they invested in us. They took a chunk back in 2017, and what that brought with it was a highly successful drinks business who were based in the States, who could take us from sort of where we were at the time and bring us to the next level in the States and give us that sort of distribution network to really go up to the next gear. So that was amazing and brilliant. And, you know, I think they probably always had we're putting a significant investment in these guys, but let's see if we can make this work. And if these guys are as good as we think they are, and if they are, we might buy the company. So that's what happened.
So they came in, just invested a little chunk in just to get involved, and the two of you started working together. Okay, it's a clever strategy.
Yeah, we started working together, worked very well together. And I suppose what we saw as, you know, we had brought from zero to where we'd got to in 2017. We'd done pretty well from a standing start. To sort of break into the next level in the drinks business, you do need that, like they call it wheels, you know, your distribution. If you don't have your wheels sorted, you know, it's a tough game, you know. So to go from good to great, you need a partner with their ambition and their magnitude and their breadth of contacts and distributors, etc. So for us, it was like, okay, look, we could hold on to this and keep doing what we're doing, but that might just maybe level off. But if we take on this investment, we're going to go up here and we're going to make this a global, like this is going to be a global brand. So that was very exciting for us, hugely exciting, and still is very much so for me. And it's one of the reasons why I'm still hard at it, because, you know, very proud of developing a brand and bringing it to where it is right now. But now this is a really new, a very different chapter, but a really exciting chapter in that it's, you know, where I from four guys literally doing everything, five guys, with Donald, who I talked about a bit, he came in quite quickly, but we're now surrounded by, there's a spirits department now in Mark Anthony, in Donnybrook. And the talent around us, the people who have worked on incredible brands, global brands, Tullamore Dew, Hendrix, Jameson, from Diageo, these really, really talented people who are just elevating us to an even higher level. So it's a really, really exciting time for me personally, but also for Glendalough as a brand and bringing it to we are in a global stage, but you know, bringing it even higher, you know, from a drinks point of view.
There's something special to see that, though, to see more and more Irish companies going the full circle, starting, selling, and then building. It's nice to see that, because then there's more entrepreneurs in the scene. There's more experienced entrepreneurs like yourself who can pass that knowledge down and forward. Before I let you go, two quick questions for you. What would your one bit of advice be to Gary starting out in 2011?
I'm a big believer in, and I've become more so as I've got grayer and older, following your passion, knowing yourself, knowing your strengths, gut. I'm a big believer in gut, because if you go against your gut, I guarantee it's going to go wrong. Because your gut is your filter. Rightly wrong, your filter. So if you go against your gut, it rarely turns out right. So keep going with your gut. Stick with what you value, your values. So what do you value? And keep to those values. Don't chase money. I think a lot of people chase the moolah. I've done it twice in my life before, two big decisions where I went for money, and I made a decision because of money, and it wasn't the right things to do. I think, you know, you can be, you know, there's a few different types of being rich. You know, you can be, and look, everybody wants to have a nice life and all that. But, you know, I think if you're very happy with what you're doing and in your life and the job you work at and that's rich. You're enriched. So sorry, I'm not sure if I've given specifics here.
No, I think follow your gut. That's super advice. I think that's advice we all kind of probably, especially now when things are a bit tumultuous, it's good advice to get. And then my final question for you is there a book that's had made a big impact on you personally or professionally?
I've got into audiobooks of late, and it's probably two, actually. One comes to mind straight away, which is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. And it's about, so he started Nike.
Mm.
And it's
very popular recommendation.
Story. Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. I loved every minute of it. And I could really relate to it because he's, you know, talking about distributors and, you know, dealing with, you know, look, there's lots of other Irish whiskies out there that would be, like Puma to Nike or whatever. So I could just see so many similarities. So I love that book. But the other one that probably definitely directed me earlier on in my life was Eat the Big Fish.
Eat the Big Fish
by Adam Morgan. So the reason I was in TVWA, an agency, and he used to work as a planner in TVWA, and just a really, really, really bright guy. But he was the guy who came up with the term challenger bonds. So I just ate that up, and that was, I gravitated towards challenger brands in my agency days, and I certainly think I've created a challenger brand in Glenlock. So it's a brilliant book. It's a fantastic book about if you're, you know, plucky entrepreneur, not much money, or, you know, you're struggling to get funds, but you really want to make your brand shine and disrupt and do all those good things, read that book. And there's courses you can actually do now and challenge your mindsets and challenge your brands. And I actually did one during the start of lockdown just to re-engage myself in that world. Mm. And it's brilliant. It's a great way of thinking. So there's two books that I would certainly recommend.
Brilliant. Gary, thank you so much. Where can people learn a little bit more about the brand?
So on our website, our Instagram channel is pretty good. But yeah, social, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Just search Glendalough Distillery, is it?
GlendalloughDistillery.com. Yeah. On any of those platforms, and you'll find out all about us. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
No worries. Good to meet you, Gar.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Gary. What an incredible chat. I love those chats where we start at the very, very beginning and bring it right through a whole journey right to the end. Love those chats. I'll be back here next Monday with the Idea Lab. I will chat to you then.